From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
A lot of things have been happening on the political front this week, haven't they, Garth?
Have they ever? What an exciting time to be an Australian.
Oh, it's all very interesting, but it makes you wonder, would there be an easier way to organise who was the leader of the party?
I reckon there
would be. I've got some ideas. I think we can take some ideas from board games. So, you know, instead of having a vote, we could have the person who most looks like a gangster, the person who last went on a train.
We could go all Cube Quest and say who's ever got the squarest head.
We could have the person who got sick last.
We could go brew crafters, and we could go in very Australian style, who had the last beer.
Oh, that would be me.
Oh, yeah. You're a slow drinker, aren't you?
Or, we, you know, there's even an app for that.
There
we could
is.
Use that great app that I've got with the statue man whose arm spins around.
Yeah, and generally points to empty space.
Exactly.
Which is pretty much where we're in our political situation anyway.
Exactly right. Look,
hey,
it's Thursday night. It's the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark and Garth, episode 85 on the 17th of September. Garth, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's been a lovely, busy week.
It has.
And we've played some games. So let's talk about what we are going to talk about this week. So we'll start, as we always do, with what we've been playing.
Fantastic.
We're also going to talk about what we do every so often when we get the time, which is an epic game
day. Oh, that will be epic, Garth.
It will be. And then we're going to catch up for lost time and talk about what we didn't get a chance to talk about last week.
Oh, that thing.
Which is one of the biggest years in your life.
Absolutely. Let's tease that in a minute. We will come back after this amazing track with more.
Fantastic. Now, if you heard it, that was Justin Hayward with Forever Autumn, Mark, and those buttons from the War of the Worlds soundtrack with the Dice Men Cometh professionally
oh,
on Edge
dear.
Radio 99.3.
Oh,
oh, my God.
It's the live audience, Garth. Look, for those of us that aren't viewing live on television, we're here in our little radio studio.
In the fishbowl.
In the bowels of the University of Tasmania. We're normally alone here. Usually the lights aren't even on. Well, at the moment, we've got about 3,000 people outside the window consuming pizza with gusto.
Exactly right.
All looking and going, what are those two nerds doing in there?
What are those guys doing? Exactly. But anyway, let's show them what we're going to
do.
And talk about what we've been playing this week, which, like us, is an oldie but a goodie.
It is. And it was. We got out at the pub.
We did.
On the pub table, showing the world our gaming goodness, our gaming stripes, St. Petersburg.
And this was almost my birthday game, wasn't it? This was a failed attempt at a birthday party for me.
It was. Look, Garth, I promise 30 people had said they were going to show.
Yeah.
But we played this three-player, so, you know, you can draw what conclusion you want. This game is from 2004, so it is vintage as far as our hobby goes. Now, designed by Bernd Brunhofer,
although
the box,
it says Michael Tummelhofer on the box that I was looking at.
That's right. And there's a story behind that, I believe, Garth.
There is. So it was designed by Bernd Brunhofer. However, he created a pseudonym, Michael Tummelhofer, because it's combining his mates Michael Bruinsma and Jay Tummelson.
Yeah.
And he's just given them credit as a thank you because of a good economic partnership.
So I guess he made a bit of money out of the game.
I think they
perhaps
all ended up making money.
And look, this game, as I said, it's got some great gaming chops. So it was a Spiel des Jahres nominee in that year, 2004. It did win the French Gaming Award, the Trick Tractor Or. It was a Hurrah Roku nominee. It won the Nederlander Spielenpreis nominee.
Excellent. It won the nominee.
It was a nominee for the best board game in Japan. It won the International Gamers Award for the General Strategy Multiplayer Game.
Yep.
It was the winner of the Fair Play A la Carte Award, and it won the Deutsches Spielepreise Best Familie Adult Game Wiener.
Well, there you go. So do you want to tell us why it won those awards?
It's a multi-award winning game. It's a fantastic game.
It is.
And look, this is one of the first games that I was introduced to when I first got into this fantastic hobby of ours. And the beauty of it is it's fairly simple. So it's a card game. I guess you could say it's hand management because you are able to have a hand of cards. But basically it's set in Russia, hence the name St. Petersburg. And you are taking cards from one of four stacks that come out to the table. Maximum of eight cards come out, depending on what cards are left over. You've got workers, or they are called craftsmen, that basically supply you with money. You have buildings that supply you with victory points. You have aristocrats that give you sometimes money, sometimes victory points, or both.
They do.
And then you have upgrade cards, and that allows you to upgrade the craftsmen, the building, and the workers to get you more stuff.
Mm.
Now, you have cash rubles that you're paying for these cards, and of course, you're always one ruble short in this game, and this is, in fact, the game that is the origin of the saying, always one ruble short, that
now,
I always
like. Is there
like
an
to
actual
use.
Saying here, or is it, again, just something that you say and
it's
have
something
tried
that
to
I
create?
Say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I'm always one ruble short. So you're using your money. So you're managing your money in a lot of ways. It's probably more about money management than hand management, because you've got to manage your money to take cards. Only a certain amount of cards come out. The money cards are obviously very important because money is short. The building cards are important because they give you victory points. The aristocrats are very, very important.
They are.
Because not only do they give you money and victory points, but at the end of the game, and the only, in fact, end of game scoring, is you get victory points based on, I think it may even be, a Fibonacci sequence.
Whoa.
Of the cards. So if you have one aristocrat, you get 1 point. If you have two aristocrats, you get 4 points. If you have three aristocrats, you get 7 points.
But they've got to be unique aristocrats.
Exactly.
They can't be five of the same
exactly,
type.
Exactly, yes.
So that's where a lot of the strategy comes into this game, because they're not cheap to buy.
No, and you know, you're getting money at the start of the round after you have your craftsmen. So firstly, you've got to buy craftsmen before you get money. I just spotted that on the and never mind, so I've been totally distracted. You've got to use your money to buy craftsmen. Then after the craftsman phase, you get money for the craftsman you have. And you don't then get money again until the craftsmen come back around, although you can get some money for the aristocrat.
So, I mean, thematically, you're paying for the craftsmen who build the resources so that you can then buy the buildings.
Yes.
So that then you can attract the aristocrats into your lovely city.
It is very thematic like that, isn't it?
Well, I guess if you explain it articulately like that. But look, it is a game where it's almost a game of two halves. The first half, it's all about the money.
Mm-hmm.
You are always short. And then for the second half of the game, you've really got to switch tack and go into victory point focus.
Yes.
Because by then, you've generally got enough. Well, in the most recent games we've played anyway, you're probably earning around about $35 or rubles per round, which should be enough to buy you a few cards, but not all the cards you want.
And, you know, you've got cards that start as, some of the craftsmen start as cheap as three. You've got the aristocrat, I'm trying to remember who she is, the mistress of ceremonies. I think she costs 24,
wow,
which is a massive. And, I mean, she's giving you a lot of money and a lot of points if you can get her out nice and early. But the downside is, you basically got to use up every ruble you got to get her down.
Exactly.
Then you've got no money to buy more craftsmen. And you do tend to get into a bit of a death spiral of having no money.
Yeah.
It is tricky. There is a lot of strategy to this game. And I love the tactical element of, because there's the eight slots out where cards can come out onto the board, if, let's say, there's three buildings left over, then when the aristocrats come out, there's only five slots to fill. Now, there's turn order for each of the four phases, and you have these little wooden markers that you pass around to indicate who's going first in the turn order of each of the phases. And so if I'm going first, and I know there's four cards coming out, because you buy in player order, I'm going to get chance to buy two cards, whereas the other two people can't. So often you want to actually take an extra card, and you can take a card, buy it, and put it out in front of you, and you get the stuff for it, basically, in that phase.
Yep.
Or you can take a card into your hand. Now, you're only allowed to have three cards in your hand,
which is tough.
It is, and your hand gets clogged very, very quickly.
Does it ever?
Particularly if you're doing this thing of taking an extra card to free up a slot so that you get one more card than everyone else, which happens a lot.
Mm.
Now, there is one card, I can't think what it's called, but lets you have four, a building that lets you have four cards.
You should
cards.
Remember what that's called, because you, sir, bought that card last game.
I did.
You did.
It's not the pub, is it?
I can't remember.
The pub is the one where you can spend money to buy victory points. Mm. Might even be the bank, but it lets you have one extra card in your hand. It is amazing what a difference being able to have four cards in your hand instead of three is. I try to grab that card every time I can. And look, I have to say, as I said, this was one of the first Euro games that I ever learned. I love it still to this day, almost 10 years later. I also love to play this game on Yukata.
Okay.
And I reckon, because it's a very realistic transformation of the game onto the digital media.
Sure.
So it looks great and it plays exactly like the board game.
That's good. And look, I think it's a really enjoyable game. I think it's showing its age a little bit. But you also look and you see... I just compare a lot of newer games that have these mechanics.
Yes.
You think, well, there's always a start. One of these games had to be the first type of game to have that mechanic. I think it looks a bit ugly, but again, it's quite old. So
it's
that's,
certainly showing its age as far as the layout of the game.
Exactly right. But I do like the fact that once you get your head around the pretty simple mechanic, it does flow pretty quickly. It says it plays in about 45 minutes plus. We were probably double that, I reckon, but that was probably my fault because it's only the second or third time I'd played it recently.
Yeah, and look, you know, we were chatting, we were having a drink. I love, as I said, I love the strategic and tactical elements of this game. It is easy to teach, easy to learn, but it does have a depth of a strategy of when do you go for buildings, when do you go for aristocrats, when do you spend all your money, when do you hold your money back. Mm. I love the mix. This is definitely a two thumbs up for me. And as I was going to say, I reckon I've played it over 100 times on Yukata.
Wow.
As well as probably... I reckon I've probably played this 20-plus times in real life. Mm-hmm. That's how much I enjoy it.
That's great. Well, look, I think... it's a really enjoyable game. I like that there's a difference in strategy. You can go for some big single value cards, mm-hmm. or you can try and stack, and that's a really good way to go. There's certainly a bit of analysis paralysis that comes into it when you've got decisions, because the thing is, there's always something good to do.
Yes.
You're never completely locked out. It's just, where am I maximizing my money? Because it is really, really tight, and what am I going to get for it? I think it's, a really fun, enjoyable game. Why can't I have a reprint?
Funny you should mention that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure... I know it doesn't show up in Board Game Geek as a reprint, but I know I saw this in one of our friendly local game stores.
Really?
With new copies, and I was surprised not to see it referenced in Board Game Geek as a reprint, because it's definitely a new printing.
Yep.
I think they might have even included the... there's a couple of expansions, New Society and The Banquet. I think they might have even included that in the new base game. They haven't really updated it much. The art is still very similar looking.
Okay.
So look, yeah, it does have that little tired look of a turn of the century Euro. But hey, look, it's great as a sort of entry level Euro with the depth of strategy. So I can highly recommend it. St. Petersburg, we loved it.
We did.
We'll be back in a minute to
with
talk
another song.
More games. Red Hot Chili Peppers, Higher Ground on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Dice Men Cometh, Mark and Garth. Speaking of going to Higher Ground, I've been going to Higher Ground on the weekends, hanging out with my family. You, sir, have been going to the depths.
Done something a lot more important than that, let me tell you.
Let's hear about it.
I think I've cashed in all my birthday wishes, all my Father's Day good fortune, because we have just finished another epic game day. Now, you've been a part of a few of these, Mark.
I have.
You've had to miss a few just because you're not committed enough to the hobby. But let's start with what this is, because we do this every so often in Dice Man World. We take a while to organise these things, but we then go and spend basically from sun up till sundown.
Yes.
Just playing games. So an epic game Sunday is not a day where you just go and sit down and play a few games.
It's not to be entered into lightly, that's for sure.
No, it is not. This is the one day every couple of months where you play those mega awesome epic games. Now, these are ones that you need to be a bit prepared for.
Yes.
These are ones that you need to make sure you've got the rules down pat.
And most of these, it would have to be said, they're not really newbie-friendly, are they?
No, these are certainly on the medium to heavy end of heavy, that's for sure. But they're also absolute table hoggers.
Oh, yes.
These will take up the whole space in the dining room and then a little bit more, and you'll have the rule book spread everywhere because there's always going to be something happening where you just don't quite know. You need a board game geek ready to go so that it's mammoth. But
yeah, they're epic in proportions as well as the length of time, that's for sure.
Yeah, now the most recent one that we played, and it was only on Sunday, was Android, which this would have been the third or fourth time that I've played Android. Yes. Now, this is Kevin Wilson, basically Blade Runner the game. We talked about it when someone was still on the show.
Yes.
Because you all came round to my place. We started it at 7 o'clock at night and we might have finished somewhere around about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, that was a long evening. That's so for sure. This was, and I seem to remember I won that game, Gareth.
Yeah, well, it's, the thing about these games is it doesn't matter. These kind of epic games, it's all about the journey. It's not at all about the final scoring. But the most recent game, Android, was great because we had 3 out of the 4 of us who'd played it before.
Yes.
And I have to tip to my hat to Aiden, the fourth player. He went out of his way and watched at least an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
How do you play this game?
That is epic in
which
itself.
Which is commitment, because that's what you need on epic game day.
Yes.
We don't want anyone turning up who's underprepared. So we played this game. We met at 11 a.m. We packed it all. Well, Trent, I must say, who is the person who put this on? Well, it's not important. I've said it once or twice now.
Yes.
He had the game ready to go.
Fantastic.
Because the very first time I got this game to the table, it took about 2 hours to set up and figure out because there are a bazillion bits and pieces.
It's a typical Fantasy Flight, massive, massive game. So many cards, tokens, bits and pieces.
Exactly right. So he had all that pretty ready to go. We just had to choose some characters. We just had to choose the scenario we were going to play and away we go. So let's say we kicked off just before 12 o'clock.
Yes.
Which is time to say hello and how are you doing and I'm going to absolutely obliterate you, et cetera. And then we finished at about 6:30.
That's pretty good, actually.
Android.
Including some lunch in there, I believe.
We did stop and we partook of a barbecue and an odd beer here or there. But that's not what it's about. It's about the game. And the game was epic in every sense of the word.
Yes.
We went through every one of the pieces of evidence. You know,
really?
So there wasn't one spare bit of evidence left to go. So the murderer, they were screwed, you know, 3/4 of the way into the game. It was epic in every sense because almost everyone knew what they were doing.
Yes.
By the end of the game, everyone knew what they were doing. Aiden, who had the successful card to say that his guilty hunch was right, got 15 victory points, but still didn't win the game.
Wow.
And this was the first time I'd seen that happen.
Yes.
In terms of score, I'll tell you where we had. We had the winner of this game with 40 points. We had
40 points?
40 points.
Oh, my God.
We had number 2 with 35 points. We had number 3 with 19 or 21. And then we had, now, I'm not sure if that's this correctly, but it was either minus 2 points or positive 2 points.
No, I can tell you that I have been talking to this person recently, and it was, in fact, negative two points. And, I mean, you know, it's not like this person doesn't play many games.
Exactly right.
In fact, he's even been known to talk about games in public.
Has.
So, you know, if you're out there, Mr. Negative 2 points, good to see that things haven't been changing for you.
Exactly right. But it leads me to the previous epic game that I'd played, which was also with this person that we won't talk about, because it was Twilight Struggle. Now, this
game
is epic, but it's a different style because you can only have 2 players.
Yeah.
You can't get your mates around who've known how to play these big board games. So we played that again from maybe 7 o'clock at night till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and we got through all the rounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever played it right to the very last round.
Exactly, which was a mammoth undertaking.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. The so-and-so beat me, so I hate that happened. But to play the full version of Twilight Struggle is something that every hardcore gamer has to do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not ranked number one game on Board Game Geek for nothing, that's for sure. It is truly an epic experience to play through the Cold War in just under the amount of time that it actually took to happen.
Yes.
It's an awesome game.
It is, and it was so soul-destroying because for the last third, I just couldn't catch him. Ah. It was so frustrating, so annoying. But look, I love talking about these games because they are so experiential.
Yes.
I will not forget those games for a long time, if ever, and that's why these epic days are just so worth it. They take a hell of a lot of commitment, though.
Yes.
We generally have about a month's worth of, can you make it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can make it. What about this day? What should I bring? What should we play? Back and forth, it goes for ages.
I feel guilty because I have agreed to come on both these epic game days and then had to pull out
yes.
right at the last minute because... basically because I forgot about it.
Yeah, so it's not that you had to, it's because you chose to.
No, I just forgot my family commitments because exactly. I just wanted to play the games.
I know. But what about some epic games that you have played, Mark?
Oh, yes.
Come on, there's got to be a
few. I've played epic games. The one that comes to mind every time, Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition.
Yes, of course.
I don't know that there's any other game that I've played for 8 hours. And the time just flies.
It does. So that's a very different game to, say, Android, for example, because with Android, there's a fair bit of downtime.
Yeah.
And the only real thing that sucks you through Android is the story, is all the flavor text, because we made a commitment at the start of the game at 11:30 in the morning, we're going to read every bit of flavor text and make sure that we maximize our enjoyment. Because if you're just doing the actions, it's a pretty ho-hum game.
Anyone out there who plays Fantasy Flight games and doesn't read the flavor text, you are missing out on half the fun of the game,
exactly,
I reckon.
Exactly, yeah.
Just creating that story, which you can do in an epic game in over a day, creating that story just makes for these experiences that you do remember and you think back, oh, remember when my character did this hilarious thing and you guys were all saying, no, you can't do that, and I did, and ah, oh, suck it, and ah.
Exactly.
You know, it's part of what makes it such an epic experience.
Definitely, and the great thing about Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition is that there is no real downtime.
Mm.
You're doing everything pretty much every turn, and there is so much to get your head around. So that game, I've not played it nearly enough.
Yes.
I've only played it again a few times, but that's because every time is an epic adventure.
Well, like another one that I want to get to the table again, and, you know, we did plan it a number of times, got it to the table eventually, haven't since, Virgin Queen.
Yes.
Which is effectively like a six-player Twilight Struggle, which is why it is so, so, so epic. with that card-driven strategy historical war game.
Yep.
But again, you know, it just the narrative of it, the story that it tells as you go through, is fantastic, and it's definitely worth spending the time.
Mm.
Another one that I still need to learn it so I can teach you guys, Andy and Abyss.
Which yes.
Similar, you know, it's a four-player card-driven strategy war game from GMT, so a similar sort of thing.
If I hadn't seen that you actually own this game, I don't think I'd believe that you do, because the number of times you said, yeah, I'll read the rules, and we're still no closer.
I know. And, you know, look, it's Cousin, Fire in the Lake, the Vietnam War in a card-driven strategy game. They're great cards. Any more that you're looking forward to in an upcoming epic game days?
Well, we've got a bit of a short list. Mm-hmm. Now, you are invited. You're more than welcome to turn up. But let me just throw a couple your way. We've got Mansions of Madness.
Oh, yes.
You know, so this is a very different style of game, again, to a lot of the ones that we've been playing. One of the gentlemen is very kindly going to read the rules over and over and basically make sure it's all down pat.
I have played that one once.
Yeah.
And again, you know, another epic Fantasy Flight experience, full of flavor, the Cthulhu mythos.
Yep.
But it's sort of like a Descent version of Arkham Horror or Eldritch Horror with the minis and the map that grows.
Yep.
Awesome, awesome, awesome game. I must make it to that one.
Definitely. Well, another one on the list was Eldritch Horror, but then we also had Game of Thrones board game.
Oh, yes.
You know, so we've got that one, which is almost, you know, it's very now, it's very appropriate, it's very, very epic in every sense.
So much gaming goodness.
Yeah, we've talked about Firefly, getting that out with all the expansions. There's a new expansion coming out in about a month or so that will make that a little bit more epic.
Yes.
One that I can't believe, or maybe I can, that you've forgotten about in its epicness, Through the Ages.
Oh, yes, I love
your
that game.
Your eight-hour gaming, painful memory.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know whether that should be on the list or not, but the one that I've really want to try is Mage Knight.
Oh.
Yeah, because this is, you know, that 8 to 10 hour game, you know, you traversing the modular board, trying to get out and about, and I was so close to buying it, but I just...
Oh, really?
I just couldn't do it.
Look, I did know of someone who had it. I'm not even sure if they do. I must hit them up and see
you
maybe.
Must.
Oh, but that would... No, that would mean I'd have to learn it and teach you all. Oh, no.
And then the final one, which is a game that we've had easy access to for years and years and years, mm-hmm. and it was actually one of the first games that I was introduced to, yes. when I was getting very first into this hobby, which is War of the Ring, which is essentially replaying, you know,
yes.
Lord of the Rings.
The epic army.
Yeah, part. So it only plays 2 to 4. I've only played 2-player, where one player is the Fellowship,
yes.
and the other player is the evil forces. And I think we were just too early on in our gaming careers because we knew it was hard,
yes.
but we never got to the point where it was fun. And I think we're there yet now. So that could be a really good option. The other one I wanted to touch on is Archipelago. You know, I've played that long game now 3 or 4 times, I
yeah.
reckon. And the long version
the long
of that...
game is like 5 hours, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and it's just so much different to a shorter or medium
yes.
game.
Yes.
It's epic.
I have to try it. I haven't tried the long game. I've played short and medium. I must get along to one of those epic games.
Well,
days.
We'll continue to invite you to another couple, and then I think we'll just have to
oh, no.
remove you from that little list.
Well, look, if out there you, the listener, are having epic game days as well, feel free, please, post your pictures, send us your information. We'd love to hear more about the games that you love spending that longer amount of time to. Now, I'm going to come back in a minute. So are you.
Okay, good.
We're going to talk about one of, I think, the most important years in gaming. It was the year that I became a Board Game Geek member.
Wow.
I'll tell you more right after this.
That was Alter with Wash It Down. Another Tassie act.
Fantastic Tassie music.
I know. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, Mark.
Garth.
I've got something exciting to tell you. Last night.
Yes.
I was in a taximobile.
Really?
On the way
home.
How
exciting, Garth.
I know. It doesn't happen. Usually I walk home. And you know what he was playing on the radio?
A bit of... What was it called?
Well,
Alter?
Well,
Tassie
could have
been Alter.
Yeah, but the main thing was Edge Radio, and we got talking.
I was listening to Edge Radio in the cab.
Because I made a joke, because that's what we do, and I said, oh, you must be that listener. and he very seriously told me that some other cabbies out there are listening to Edge Radio, which is great.
Oh, fantastic.
And then I said, oh, well, I do a show on Edge Radio.
As you would.
And he goes, oh, yeah, when is it? And I went, 7 o'clock Thursdays. And he goes, are you a dice man?
Oh, what? Get out of here!
Exactly. And this is actually true.
Oh, my God.
So it was amazing. I have booked an agent. I figure that the phone calls from, I don't know, Hollywood or someone will start calling.
Or taxis combined.
We might get a normal priced taxi fare. Who knows? But anyway, I just want to say hello all the taxi drivers of Hobart and keep listening to Edge Radio. Now, Mark.
Fantastic. Good on you, taxi drivers. We love yous all.
We do. Now, Mark, you were talking about the year that you became a BGG member.
Yes.
How did you join before the internet was created?
Oh, Garth, it seems like a long time ago, but really, it was only 10 years.
Wow.
Just 10 years ago today, I joined a little website called Board Game Geek. And let me tell you a bit of a story. Let me take you on a bit of a journey.
Frodo.
And the year that I joined Board Game Geek. Oh, it seems like only yesterday, Mr. Frodo.
Oh, dear.
But look, the awesome thing that happened in 2005 wasn't really that when I joined Board Game Geek. It was all the absolutely amazing games that came out in the year 2005. And Garth, I want to talk about one or two or 15 of these games.
Now, I want to briefly mention that we only sort of thought about this and said, yeah, that's a good year to have a look at without even looking at what games were.
Yeah, look, let's do a little bit
where
we talk about
review.
Some games. Let's pick a year. Oh, 10 years ago. That's cool. Let's have a look at that. And then As I started to look down the list, that's enough, thanks, Frodo. as I started to look down the list...
You basically got slapped in the face with a whole lot of gaming goodness.
Oh, it was just like, a wet fish jumped out of the Brandywine River and jumped into my mouth and was the tastiest fish ever.
Stop
really?
It. Just talk about something that isn't fish or the Shire.
Oh, but Mr. Frodo... The nasty little games. Where do I start? I'm going to start at game number 1092.
Okay.
On Board Game Geek.
All right.
A little card game. I happen to really not like this game very much, but I know it has a lot of fans. I know some listeners of the show love this game.
Okay.
It is the card game Gloom.
Oh, yeah.
And, some people, they just put these cards down and kill their characters. Some people love to tell little stories about how their characters get sick and died. And it has that really interesting mechanic of the cards that you can see through.
Clear plastic
ones,
yeah.
As you're overlaying them, different bits of different cards from different layers carry over, get you more points, less points. So it's a very interesting mechanic.
Yes.
I myself, as I said, I'm not a huge fan of this game, but I know it does have a lot of fans.
But the interesting thing about this game is that, unlike the whole premise of the game, it refuses to die. Because this game has had so many versions. I think there's a new one out last year or maybe this year even. Really? Yeah. I played it once, and to be honest, I can't even remember the end of the game.
Look, let's move on and climb the list.
Okay.
It's lofty heights we're climbing towards. Mall of Horror.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of really interesting things about this game. I own it.
Yep.
It was one of the first games I ever bought after I saw it on Board Game Geek, and I just went, get the flock out of here. That looks awesome. You know what I didn't realize? The creator of this game, Nicholas Normandon, who created it for Asmodee.
Yeah.
He, and doesn't surprise me at all now I find out, he was the creative director of a little software company called Ubisoft.
Oh, is that little one?
That little one, you can see the computer game sensibilities in this game. It's very thematic, very story-driven.
Yep.
Again, by Asmodee, who do some great games. And, of course, it's come out, 3 years ago?
Yeah, three or four, as City
of
Horror.
With the re-implementation as City of Horror, where they've made it even better, even meaner, even more thematic.
Yes. And I've got that game and I love it. And I love the Water Tower 3D part of the board. The only bad experience I ever have with that game is when I'm playing with my parents.
They don't like being killed by zombies?
They don't like, they're not good negotiation game people. Anyway.
Well, look, let's keep climbing the list. A famous European designer, again with Asmodee, Ludovic Montblanc, who has done a lot of work with our good friend, Bruno Cathala, Cash and Guns.
Yep.
That famous gun-pointing game. I haven't played it for ages, but it been re-released just recently. Again,
another expansion was out at Gen Con as well.
These games keep continuing. Next, Asmodee again with our good friend, Bruno Cathala.
You're a bit of an Asmodee fan, aren't you?
I am. And Bruno's good friend, also known as Bruno, Bruno Faduti, Mission Red Planet.
Yes.
Now, this is another one. I played it back in the day, not in 2005, but probably 2008 or 2009. Very much, I think, an underappreciated game, this. It took Bruno Faduti's mechanic from Citadels of the role selection.
Sure.
Into a slightly heavier Euro game where you're basically racing off to Mars in a sort of a Jules Verne steampunk type world, trying to colonize Mars, and it's a area control game. You're trying to get the most victory points by having the most of Mars. But it's got like a trader bit there where you can blow someone's ship up before it takes off.
Excellent.
It is a really good game. And
it got another edition in the last year or two on Kickstarter,
wasn't it? Again, just recently come out again. Look, let's keep climbing this ladder of gaming greatness. Wits and Wages also came out in 2005 by Dominic Crapuchet or Crapuchets from North Star Games. This was obviously the game that put them on the map. You know, if you're looking for a trivia game, and let's face it, who isn't?
Trivial Pursuit.
And you hate Trivial Pursuit like most people do. Wits and Wagers does it because
yes, it does.
You don't have to know all the answers. You get to bet on who you think might know the best answers. And all the answers are numerical. So you can even take a guess.
Exactly. And it's good for all ages. Good for all ages. Kids can play it as well.
So. Well, you know, they did bring out a kids edition, a family edition.
Yeah.
It's great. Let me keep climbing. Louis the 14th.
Okay.
Now, this one's maybe more of an acquired taste. And again, this would have been in the handful of Euro games that I played right at the beginning of the genesis of my gaming career and blew my mind with, oh my God, I can't believe a game can do this with card play, area control, victory points, tokens. It has it all.
Fantastic.
It has that very dry European sensibility.
I was going to say, I can already picture the box. There's a person looking out into the distance on a horse or something.
It's probably King Louis himself.
Yep.
And it has courtiers and things like that. But, you know, Rüdiger Dorn, who was the designer of Istanbul.
Mm-hmm.
The
not Constantinople.
No,
just
no.
Just to beat you to it.
No. The Kennerspiel winner. You know, this is another great game from Alia Games. Now, one of my very, very early favourites, it's again Bruno Cathala. His work with Serge Lager from Days of Wonder, the game that really brought cooperative games to the fore, Shadows over Camelot.
Semi-cooperative.
With a traitor.
Yeah, which is great.
Look, I love this game. I still have my copy, half-painted. I just never got around to finishing painting. And, you know, it was one of those ones I did think about trading away, and I just thought, no, I'm going to hang on to it. Yes, I'd rather play Battlestar Galactica and a few other of those games, but this really has a soft spot in my heart, Shadows over Camelot. I have really enjoyed it.
Yep, and I enjoyed watching The Tabletop, I think it was.
Yes.
They did an episode with that, and that was really good because I've not played it.
Oh,
I'd more than happily play it with you, Mark.
You are missing out.
If you ever turned up to Epic Games.
A couple more quick ones I'll mention, then we'll take a break and we'll come back with the monsters. So you'll remember Leon talking about Fury of Dracula by Fantasy Flight Games. It's another 2005 game by Kevin Wilson. And also, Kevin Wilson and his Fantasy Flight cohorts, Descent, Journeys in the Dark, the first edition, was also 2005. And I'll tell you what, Fantasy Flight had an awesome year in 2005 because they also produced Lord of the Rings, The Confrontation.
Yeah.
We'd had Rainer Knizia teaming up with Eric Lang and Christian Peterson,
wow,
a Fantasy Flight game. So look, there's, you know, two parts of the world colliding. One more Fantasy Flight game I'm going to mention before I go to a musical break. We talked about Eldritch Horror. The precursor to that, of course, the Cthulhu game of Cthulhu games that is too epic even for an Epic Game Day. Arkham Horror, of course, by Richard Lonius and Kevin Wilson. So, look, Fantasy Flight had 5 games in that list. Asmodee had 3. We've still got... I've got 6 more here that I'm going to mention when I come back briefly.
Yeah, I've got a couple. Can I mention one now?
Yes, go for it.
Just to get it out of the way.
Yes.
Not many games have a 70th edition. But there was the 70th edition of Monopoly. Now you can go and play a song, Mark.
Right, okay. We will be back in just a minute. Wow, that ends in a bang, doesn't it?
That was Depeche Mode with I Feel You, Mark.
And look, people who think that I might have pressed the wrong button at the start there, it was part of the track, that screeching noise. I love a bit of Depeche Mode, though.
Now, Mark, you are regaling us with your 2005 history lesson.
That I am.
But I thought I'd interrupt with a little game that you seem to have missed.
Yes.
Now,
to the end yet.
It has a dubious honour.
Oh.
As being known as the thinking man's drinking game.
What?
It is officially, according to BGG, the game with the lowest rank
of
all games released and then had anyone bother to vote on it. It's called Wench.
Oh, really?
Which I'm not even going to talk to you about.
You sure it's not the drinking man's thinking game?
No, it's just the drinking man's drinking game, I think.
Right.
Geek rating of 5.288. Not very good.
Goodness.
Talk about something better.
Look, I'm coming down to the last 5 or 6 that I want to mention. Glory to Rome.
Oh, that one.
Ed Carter and Carl Chudik from Cambridge Games. Funnily enough, you and I, Garth, were sitting outside the studio here, and I had a copy of Mott and I in my hand,
yeah.
A Kickstarter from Asmodee Games by Carl Chudik, which is supposedly the spiritual successor to Glory to Rome. Glory to Rome, if you haven't played it, just play it.
Yeah.
It's or fantastic.
Find the $400 you need to get a copy on Amazon yes. or eBay, because this thing, it's an investment. If anyone ever bought it, because a lot of people did.
Yes.
Yeah, you'd be selling it for $350. It puts Fury of Dracula to shame yeah. in how much it's worth.
Look, I love this game. You know, it's just the Carl Chudik, Glory to Rome, innovation. It happens in Modern Eye where you're using cards in multiple ways. It's so clever. And this is the first game that he did it with.
Yep.
I love it. If you get your hands on this or you can play it, get to it.
Definitely.
Counting down and climbing this illustrious ladder, Alan Moon, of course, who I think must be one of the only men actually making a living out of board games.
Him and Reiner.
Ticket to Ride Europe. So his follow-up to the base, the standard game Ticket to Ride, where he brought a little bit more complexity to it, Days of Wonder. Days of Wonder obviously had a great year in 2005 with Shadows Over Camelot and Ticket to Ride Europe. Now, I know some of you, and I know you, Garth, I don't think you've got this one for the table. The person who previously sat in this chair never wanted to get touch this game. I love it, I tell you. Railways of the World.
Oh, woohoo. Sorry. Choo-choo.
Yeah. First came out as, what was the name of that computer game?
Atari.
Railroad Tycoon.
Oh, yeah.
So it came out as Railroad Tycoon, basically being sort of an implementation of that computer game. The name has then been changed to Railways of the World by Martin Wallace,
yep.
Our friend from across the pond.
Knows how to design a game.
And Glenn Drover from Eagle Games. You've got to get to that table. It is really great. It's my favorite train game. Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition, we've already mentioned that one, so I won't go on again, but, you know, it was one of the great games. It is one of the
Still
great
is.
Games, and it came out in 2005. Kalis.
Yep.
Now, maybe doesn't get a lot of love these days, but it was really the first worker placement game. The first game to bring that worker placement mechanism to our Euro games, and for that alone, it is owed a lot of love. William Attia from Istari Games.
And it's really highly regarded, really highly rated yes. as well. And isn't it on Board Game Arena? Is it? It's on one of those ones. I'm sure of it.
You can get it in an app form.
Okay.
And I have it. I think I have it on my iPhone that I don't use anymore. And the problem is there's just so much going on.
Yeah, okay.
You can't play it on an iPhone.
Sure.
And look, last but not least, we talked about this game already today. It's an epic,
it sure
truly
is.
An epic, Twilight Struggle by Ananda Gupta and Jason Matthews from GMT. I mean, what more can we say about this game?
What a year.
It is the number one game on Board Game Geek for a reason. It's a fantastic... Yeah, it's only two players, but it's brilliant. You've got to get it to the table. That is 2005. Is that an awesome year
that
or
That is
what?
A vintage. You want to just take that year, bottle it, and then just release it year on year on year. Those games are fantastic. And the fact that so many of them have had multiple printings.
Yes.
Twilight Struggle had a deluxe version released not too long ago. It's just play them all. Awesome, play all the games.
Awesome. Now, look, 2005 was so great. It's used up all our time. We'll be back next week with more gaming goodness. Have a great gaming week. Play lots more games. Post us some photos of your epic game days, and we'll see you next week.
We will.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.